Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Mr. Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. How are you doing, Stone?
I am doing well. Good morning, sir. My bride and my oldest are back from across the pond. Went and picked them up at the international terminal last night, so everything's coming up, Stone.
And so how was your daughter's trip to Oxford?
She had a blast. She learned a ton, made good friends with a lot of new folks, one of which was a lady from Algeria, I think. And so this is going to be important to you because you're such a coffee person. I am going to be first made and then taught how to make Algerian coffee over the weekend.
Oh, exciting.
So looking forward to that. And then today's a banner day because this evening we're going to go watch your son perform in a contest, a poetry contest.
That's right. Slam Poetry with the sponsored by the Atlanta Hawks. He's a finalist. And today's the big competition at the Hard Rock.
And he learned this from you. You've been working with him since
Slam
he was
Poetry
knee-high,
since
right?
I've been very early on.
Well, we have a fantastic show on tap today, and we have a studio full. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Michelle Matthews with Matthews Consulting Group. We're going to talk with Graham Taylor with Voice Nation, and some folks from ISIC are back, so that's going to be fun. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the virtual HR director, Mr. Gary Wheeler. Welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you and in the flesh, not virtual for today, but give us a little bit of a feel, if you would, a little overview about mission and purpose. What are you guys out there trying to do for folks?
We focus on working with small and mid-sized organizations, primarily small, because most small businesses do not have a human resources department or a human resource professional. So we try to help them get compliant, operate in a profitable way, get their people on tap, and make sure everybody's productive.
Now, has your background always been in virtual HR, or did you have a non-virtual HR career prior to this?
I had a real non-virtual HR career. I spent 24 years with United Parcel Service, UPS, and of those 24 years, 18 of those was in human resources. And
wow.
Just about every HR capacity you can imagine.
Now, what size companies are the ones that typically work with you?
We work with anyone from a startup to approximately about 150 employees. Usually, and I just say usually, not everyone, but usually once an organization has 150 employees, they tend to bring in a full-time HR person on staff.
So how do you know, as a small and up-and-coming company, how do you know when it's time to reach out to someone like you? What are some of the indicators to look for?
Well, actually, our philosophy is everyone should have someone giving them HR support right from the very beginning.
Early and often is the answer I'm hearing.
Yes. As soon as you have like 3 to 5 employees, you really should be at least talking to someone. Now, you're not going to hire someone in a full-time capacity, but there are different programs out there to give you support because a couple of things that are business killers is compliance. And right now, the government is passing lots of legislation that can kill a small business owner if they're not doing the right things.
So now, what are some of those, some of the ways that you kind of watch the back of your clients?
Well, first thing we do is we always start off with a compliance audit. And in that compliance audit...
That sounds scary.
Yes, it is. It's really scary when a business owner goes, I'm really supposed to be doing that. But we start off with a compliance audit, and from there we can find, we'll get them compliant, and then from there it's all the other things you may need, such job descriptions, performance evaluations, and we try to do those so that they're actually tied to the bottom line, so you can measure individual performance, and individual performance is actually linked to the business success.
So you can actually help a company become more profitable?
Absolutely. That's, you know, if it's not saving you money or helping you make more money, then why would you do it?
Is that why they don't do compliance, most companies? They don't see the value?
A lot of it is you don't know
what you don't know.
Yes, exactly. So often you have the entrepreneur who's always been an entrepreneur, and they go into business for themselves, and well, I don't need all these other functions. I can do it on my own.
Right.
But they don't know what they're supposed to be doing in certain areas.
So I bet you see some of the same really dangerous mistakes over and over and over, and you probably just kind of roll your eyes. But what are some patterns, some of the major mistakes that companies make, and they probably better get on top of it pretty quick?
Well, especially in Georgia, right now they have the law that was passed 2 years ago, the immigration law. So, for example, many business owners don't know that they have to use E-Verify by July 1 of this year whenever they hire someone. Most businesses don't complete their I-9s properly, and there's a new I-9 that was just launched, and every business needs to be compliant by May 8th. People will, business owners say, hey, I don't like you anymore, you're fired. And, of course, next thing you know, there's an EEOC charge or some discrimination charge or something that the employee or former employee said that the business owner did or didn't do. So
how did you get into this line of work? I know you're with UPS, but what compelled you to make the jump?
I was in an MBA program, and those are dangerous.
They start filling your head full of ideas, right?
I can be an entrepreneur. I don't need this company anymore. I can be successful. So that's really what the jump was. I wanted to do something different before it was too late and try my hand at being a business owner, and it's been very, very good. I mean, excellent experience.
Now, what was it like in that transition? Because a lot of people, we interview a lot of business people who had a corporate career and then that go off on their own. You know, when you were at UPS and you're like, hey, I'm Gary with UPS, they're like calling you back like boom, 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 right? Because you're Gary with UPS. And then now you're Gary with the, the virtual HR director. Do the callbacks come as quickly?
No. I mean, the bottom line is you have to get out there and sell. Every business owner has to get out there, and they have to put themselves out there and believe in themselves.
But how was that transition for you to, you had a lot of infrastructure at UPS, I'm sure, and now, when you're on your own, you're going through the same thing that a lot of startups go through.
Yeah, it was a challenge. It was scary. It was a challenge. At first, I thought I needed to create all the systems at one time before I got started.
Right.
Then I realized I just need to make it happen as I go and surround yourself with the right people.
So you have advisors that help you, mentors that are kind of helping you?
I do. And actually, next month, I'm actually bringing on an official advisory board. So
Don't forget the I-9.
No.
Do you have an HR consultant?
One of my colleague or assistants, she works for me, and she's pretty much my HR manager. She keeps me in shape.
So let's dive into how it all works. Walk us through an engagement cycle, if you will. Let's say we're intrigued with the service. Walk us through that a little bit. What happens?
The first thing we do, and some things we do face-to-face, and many things we don't have to, but the first things we do is, as I mentioned, we go through the compliance audit. After the audit, we help them get compliant, which we can do that relatively quickly. The next thing is, all right, now what do you need? What are the pieces that are missing? So it could be job descriptions, performance evaluations, employee handbook. Those things will help drive your business. So we have to learn a little bit about what they do so we can help create the tools so that they can be successful.
And then what's the rhythm in communication and activity after you kind of get that foundation stuff and you get me protected and I'm not going to get sued and all that kind of stuff? What's the rhythm then? Are we talking every month, every quarter?
Yeah, we actually have different programs based on the size of your business and your needs. So we have one program where we're actually the part-time HR director for that organization. So that's a weekly communication, and we're consistently working on projects or processes to help that business. Naturally, always on call for employee issues. We have another program, which is really called a membership program, and that's really for that micro business and 50 or less employees. And in that particular program, it's whenever you need us.
And so can I call you and you'll come in and fire people for me?
No, but we
you don't do that.
Well, I'm the axe man at Business Radio X now, but I'd love to have a guy. Hey, Gary, I need you to let this one go.
No, we teach people how to do that so that they do it and they're doing it properly.
What about in terms of hiring? Now, because every company has a different kind of profile of what the employee should be. Do you help craft that to help them make sure that they're hiring the people that are a good fit culturally in the company?
Yes, if they have a need to help, some direction on how to select the right person, the right team, we help them with that. We come up with what's called a behavioral interview template, which we encourage all of our businesses to use so you can be consistent. And in that behavioral interview template, it's going to have questions that are geared towards the success of that business based on the type of
And then you
position.
Customize that to whatever, because like a startup technology might have a different profile than somebody that's like a manufacturer.
That's right? Correct. Yes. Yeah. There'll be like four or five core areas, particularly how you treat customers, internal or external, or work with managers. But then you want them to be geared around whatever their expertise is.
Now, do you have a sweet spot in terms of a client? Mm-hmm. Are they of certain size? Are they a certain industry?
Now we go across all industries, and we want to do that. It helps us, and it helps us leverage that capability. But 10 to 50 is really that sweet spot.
And it could be anywhere in the country, or do you work primarily here in Atlanta?
Anywhere in the country. Actually, most of our clients are either in California or New York right now.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, I need some more Georgia clients.
How does that happen?
I've been invited to speak, you know, and different groups. And usually we have that membership program is usually a no-brainer for most businesses. So if people hear me speak often, they'll just say, hey, I want to sign up. So
then what topics do you speak on?
Compliance. I just scare them.
You scare them, and then they're like, hey, I got some questions, and then all of a sudden you got another account.
Yes.
So as part of my extensive and thorough pre-interview research, I made myself a toddy and watched a few pieces from your YouTube channel.
Thank you.
And one of them that I watched had to do with some sort of certification that you help people acquire, and you get a lot of more letters after your name after that. So this is an aspect of your work as well, right?
It is. It is. HR professionals typically will get some type of designation, similar to a CPA, but it's the process is different. So it's either the PHR, Professional in Human Resources, or SPHR, Senior Professional in Human Resources. So I had served on the Human Resource Certification Institute board at one time. That's the certifying body for HR professionals. And so someone asked me, could you teach a course for us? And I did that, and I've been doing it ever since. So I help people prepare for the PHR and the SPHR exam.
So you really are committed not only to serving your market, but you have a genuine vested interest in serving your profession as well.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fantastic. So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more?
They can go to the website, and that's thevirtualhrdirector.com. And I have to put that "the" in there because there's others out there with similar names. Or they can call me, 678-997-0017.
Well, thanks so much for coming down to the studio and visiting with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I think it'd be fun to have you come back, maybe with a client. I think that might be fun, kind of get it from their perspective. Do you think you can find one that'll say something nice about you?
I think so.
we'll make that happen. Hey, how about hanging with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from Matthews Consulting Group, the President Lee, the Grand Poobah, Miss Michelle Matthews. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Did you learn anything out of that last segment?
I did. I think I've actually run across Gary in work that I've done. I remember his name, so it's nice to
Are you compliant, reconnect. Michelle? That's really what we want to know.
Yes. I try to be.
We're going to put you on the record right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Say that you're compliant. So consulting, what kind of counsel are you out there offering folks?
So we do a lot of work to help organizations really figure out where they're trying to go and how to align systems and their processes to get there. So a lot of strategic planning. And we also focus on organizational change, which is the alignment part. You know, how do you help leaders and people be able to get done what you're actually trying to achieve in your vision? And then we also do leadership coaching, which is around helping those executives or those up-and-coming executives figure out what they want to do, what kind of objectives they want to achieve, and how they can be better in what they do every day.
So now when you're working with companies at that level, are they open to this? Like, I guess they're open enough to have that initial conversation with you, but how open are they when you start telling them that, you know, okay, now it's time to actually change something?
Yeah, you know, the...
You know, it sounds good. You know, talking.
I'm sure they embrace it with open arms, right? Every time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the analogy that I use is a lot of times this whole idea, because it is a lot of complexity and change. We hear that, you know, that's the only thing that's constant. And so a lot of times the work that we do is analogous to recycling. I mean, who really would say it might not be a good idea to recycle? But then when it comes to actually recycling your own trash,
and sorting and putting it in things, and now I got more work to do.
Exactly. And so you find that people are generally open and understand that they have to change, but it is sometimes a challenge when you really help them understand what specifically they have to do. And so I think that's where the planning and the organizational piece comes together, because we, during the process of developing that plan, we begin to test them in terms of understanding how willing are they to actually make those changes. And one of the things that I also coach and advise people, you know, there's a lot of ways to get your objectives accomplished. And if you really are not committed to a particular course of action, then maybe we need to tweak that strategy, because once you've stepped in there, you really have to follow through in order to have credibility with your constituents and with your customers.
Now, have you ever had a situation where somebody comes in and says, you know, Michelle, we're, you know, there's some issues here, we're having some problems, and I'd like you to look at our organization and, you know, recommend some, you know, changes we have to make. And then you're doing that and you're going, you know what? The change is this guy's the problem. The problem.
Yeah. You know, I would say that that happens. Maybe the way that I would look at it is usually it's not a wholesale that person is the problem. Usually it's there's some kind of tweaking or something that we need to do that maybe shifts the way that they lead or shifts the way that they communicate. And so in those cases, it's a little bit easier because you can help them understand how they can leverage their strengths, and then you can give them sort of that tough feedback to say, but those strengths aren't going to help you overcome this particular situation. You're going to have to make some kind of change. In the situations where it's pretty clear that that person is just not well suited for the job, you know, sometimes that's a conversation with the board of directors or that person's manager if they're not, you know, at the top of the organization. And sometimes that does happen. But what you try to do is to help that individual see that there are other opportunities. You know, every challenge can be turned into an opportunity.
That's right. So how do you go to market? There are other consultants in the local market, the national, international market. How do you differentiate yourself and get your own little corner of the sandbox to practice your craft?
Well, I think one of the things is you have to be out there and you have to be networking. I remember when I first started, which was back in 1999, I came out of a corporate consulting environment, and I was getting some advice from somebody that had been in business 15 years. And one of the things they told me to do is, you know, you need to cold call. And I think part of being an entrepreneur is knowing yourself and knowing what your strengths are. And I'm not that cold caller. So what I recognized is a real strength is I develop relationships. And so my answer to that question is I do a lot of networking, and I get a lot of business by referrals. So in that 15 years that Matthews Consulting has been around, I would say in any given year about 60% of the work that we get is through referral of a previous client or somebody that we work with in another situation. So that's a nice situation to be in.
Oh, yeah.
Now, can you share maybe a success and walk us through how that process, how that relationship was started, and then how you helped them achieve whatever they were trying to achieve?
So if I take one of you know, I have a lot of favorites, but one of my favorite stories about what we were really able to do for an organization was it was a situation where there was a referral. We came into it happened to be a nonprofit in the public health sector who was really going through some challenges. They saw that their funding stream was really going to be in jeopardy over time. You know, funders want to fund you, but then they want you to be sustainable. And they were really having a challenge with rallying all of the employees to really understand the new direction that they wanted to go. And so we came in and we did an assessment to really understand what the challenges were. And when we delivered back to the executives, it was a executive director and a sort of chief of staff. Part of the issue was that they weren't on the same page. And it's really interesting. Yeah. This client we worked with back in the early 2000s, and we're still working with them. And we are part of the, sort of the story of their culture, where we took them out. I took them out to lunch, and I said, really, it's time for the two of you to get on the same page. And if you can't, then I'm not sure that you can implement this strategy. And so from doing that, it really had them sit back and take a hard look at how they were leading the organization and what they really wanted. and it helped. We worked with them to get on the same page. So fast forward, we've done 3 strategic plans with them. They have completely changed their business model, and where they went from really being concerned that they weren't going to be in business, they are now in a different space and have a different way that they deliver their services, where they literally cannot achieve all the things that some of their funders and some of their clients want to achieve. So that's really a situation where we took them from, they were in jeopardy, to help them reshape what they wanted to accomplish, and then they really are on a path to success.
It sounds like a great deal of your work, and it makes perfect sense that this would be the case. It is a little bit remedial. You're going in and you're patching up some things that have gotten a little bit off track. And it also seems like, wouldn't it be great if in starting a new business, you could just set everything up right the first time? What counsel, if any, would you offer startups to at least, you know, get between the ditches and keep things on track early on?
So I would say, and I can kind of liken it to my own experience, I think the first thing is getting clarity around what it is that you're really trying to accomplish and thinking about what is the value that you really want to bring into the marketplace and to your clients. So I think that that's the first thing. And I would say it's really important to focus on the what, have a good idea of the how, but not be so wedded to it that you can't see shifts in the market. So I'm an avid reader, and I remember I read a phrase, I don't remember what publication, and it says, stay married to the market and not the method. And I think that that's really important for startups, because life is going to change. If we think about what life was like in the business community 5 years ago, it's different than it is today. So as an example, I still do strategic planning, but the way I do it is very different today than when I first started, because I'm married to what does the market need, what is important in the environment, not the way that I did it back in 1999 when we first started. So clarity about what you're trying to accomplish, staying very close to your environment and your marketplace so that you can shift and have changes. And then I think probably the third thing, although there's, you know, a lot of things I could talk about, it's thinking about the culture that you want to create in your organization. Because to be able to deliver, you can have a great vision, but truly successful organizations are those that can execute. And to execute, you need people. And so people want to work with people they like. They want to have rewarding opportunity, and they want to see that they can achieve their dreams. And so you've got to think about how are you investing in your employees so that they too can, you know, come to market in a way that's very valuable.
So you're going to hear that quote again, maybe
you're gonna
show.
Steal that.
You know, I hope I remember who to attribute to. Stay with to the market, but not the middle. That's outstanding. I'm sorry, go ahead, Lee.
Now, I had a question. You said that a lot of your business, up to 60% of your business, is from referrals. Can you share that? I think that's super, and I think it's important for companies out there to understand how you're able to take a client that's happy with your service and then, you know, encourage them to refer to you. Do you have a system in place that allows that to occur? Because that seems like a above average, phenomenal kind of referral rate.
I'm not sure that I would say that it's a formal system. I think one thing I found about the Atlanta market in particular is that they're very open to small business. And I think that in a lot of cases, I've seen that they are champions. They like the little guy. And so I think, first, obviously, you got to do good work. I think then the other thing that I learned, I set an advisory board up when I first got started, is you got to ask. You know, I came from IBM, so it's that idea of ask for the order. So I think you do it in a way that once you know you've bought value and that they feel like you have done good work, you just ask, are there others that they know that have similar problems or similar opportunities that you think we could help them with? And you would be surprised with just asking that on a regular basis, the degree to which people are willing to open up their Rolodex and help you identify other people that they can help, because it makes them look good, right?
Yeah.
If I can help you solve your problem by connecting you with someone that can help you do that, then you remember not only the person that helped you, but you remember the source as well.
So what's next for you? Where are you going to put your energies over the next 12 to 18 months, you think?
Well, I'm really looking to continue to grow my business. I think that's, you know, one of the challenges of small business, particularly when the business is you, in terms of a professional service, is how do you expand? So we're really trying to be in expansion mode. We've been very fortunate that through that referral base, we've been growing year over year, you know, really all of the 14 years that we have been in business, but in particular during this challenging economic time. So it's continuing to just continue to set a good foundation and then continue to grow on it.
Well, let's do what we can to help and make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you.
So our website is Consult Matthews. We just recently switched it. It's Consult Matthews, and that's Matthews with two T's. And then our phone number is 404-799-5603, and we'd love to hear from you.
And we'll make sure that we get that information posted on the website for folks that come back and listen to the archive of this interview as well.
Great. Thanks so much.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you come visit with us.
Well, thank you. It's been great.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to have you back.
Well, we want to come back.
All right. You going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. We're looking forward to it.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Lee, the Vice President with Voice Nation, tagline, which I like very much, going beyond the call. Please welcome to the show, if you will, Mr. Graham Taylor. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, thanks. And yes, I am compliant.
That's good. We have to ask every person from this point forward.
Yes.
So what is Voice Nation doing for folks out there in the world?
We are doing many things these days. We started out with automated services, virtual PBXs, all that sort of stuff, and made a big bold change a few years ago, about 3 years ago, to get into call centers, live answering.
Oh, wow. So that was a big switch, though, right?
It was a big switch, actually, for us, because we were really driven into it, though, because we had clients who expected a quality service from us. Mm-hmm. They wanted live answering. We tried outsourcing it for a while. We just couldn't get the quality that we needed, so we decided to do it ourselves.
Now, when you're working, you're changing from kind of a technology to a human service business. How did you get your call center people trained up to give the service that you wanted them to do? Because that seems like a challenge unto itself.
Challenge would be one word for it, yes. We actually did surprisingly well. We had a superb call center manager. Mm-hmm. We had some good people on board at the time anyway. And we were just able to take people literally off the street and turn them into incredibly effective call center operators. And I think we probably have about 50 on board right now, trying to increase that by another 200 by the end of the year.
Now, are they doing inbound where they're answering questions, or are they doing outbound or both?
At the moment, it's all inbound.
Uh-huh.
So it's game over. I'm sure this is going to be a fantastic interview, but you know my pet project, Business Radio X UK.
Yes.
One of the things that I'm looking for now is a good, solid host for Business Radio X UK. I think I found my number one candidate. I had no idea.
It's just the voice, isn't it?
It's the voice, the accent, the
Everybody
presence.
Everybody tells me the voice.
This is fantastic. But for now, we will talk about Voice Nation since we agreed to do that. So strikes me as a pretty competitive landscape. How do you differentiate yourself in that marketplace?
Just one word, quality. We've been used to providing quality services to our customers, and we just kept it going. It's just quality all the way, and our website for our call center is actually called qualityansweringservice.com, and there's no coincidence behind that.
Right.
And, you know, the people who do use our service just expect that quality from us, refer us like crazy to everybody they know. So we've ended up with some pretty impressive customers over the years.
Now, do you have sweet spots in terms of industries that are that you work with more than others?
We tend to go a little bit more with the small to medium-sized companies, but that doesn't exclude people like McDonald's. Uh-huh. We've even got the Colbert Report, the American Red Cross.
I want that
FEMA.
Number. I want to call the Colbert Report number.
If I'm calling the Colbert Report, what questions are you answering for me?
The Colbert Report one is one we always enjoy. It's kind of a seasonal one, but it's all to do with the line that he does about every September, October time, and It's the. I really don't want to go into it. I'm going to offend somebody if I do.
But like, say you work with an attorney. What would be some of the challenges they would be having where they would need your service?
The main problem, of course, is with any business, is just having people to answer those calls.
Off hours?
Or? Exactly, off hours. And those off hours could be as simple as lunchtime.
Really?
What are you going to do? Employ several receptionists just to answer your calls
right
during the day.
Right.
So we can take those calls at 2 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and it might be something important in the case of an attorney, one of their clients who's got themselves into a bit of bother and needing help there and then. So
if they have, you can give them an employee 24/7 to always,
absolutely.
So they're always accessible to a client or a potential client.
Exactly.
So I'm fascinated because you got this thing off the ground back in 2009 when the economy, mm-hmm. Was just absolutely rock bottom, and you skyrocketed from there. You got to let us in on a little bit of the secret sauce, man.
No. It's ours. You're not getting it. But the only really word to describe the growth we're doing just now and going to experience in the future is just explosive. It really is just going crazy. Where the revenues are doubling year over year. The as I say, we're trying to employ 200 new call center operators this year.
Are they going to be here in town, or are they going to be all over?
They're going to be over in Beaufort.
Really?
They're going to be real local. They're going to be Beaufort people. Right. We're building a new call center. We're just about to start that in about a month's time. That'll be about another 3,000 or 4,000 square feet, and we'll probably have to do the same again next year.
Now, isn't it kind of ironic that as the world becomes more digital, there's more of a need for a person, a human being, to answer a phone?
I think you actually answered the question yourself there. I think as we become more digital, people just want to interact more with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. When we were first involved in this business, we had automated services, voicemail, basically.
Right.
And, people just don't really like voicemail anymore. And you've got the other problem, of course, if you've got somebody scanning through the internet looking for a service, be it a lawyer or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they see a phone number, they call that number. If they don't answer, they get a busy signal or a voicemail.
They're on to the next guy.
They're on to the next one, yeah.
Now, do you play in the world where a lot of the, you'll see on some websites it'll say live chat, right? And then some of them say live operator.
Yeah.
Like, is that where you are also involved? Like, I can put it on my website, live operator, it could go to your service?
You could certainly do that. There would be no reason why not. Yeah. Usually it would be a phone-type operator service, but...
But it's the same principle, right?
Yeah.
It's a human being interacting with my...
For a lot of our clients right now, we actually go to their websites and do, web ordering, customer support, that sort of thing, through the client's website.
Well, I think it's a much better idea because I'll tell you from personal experience, I've gone to some of those places and said, okay, great, let's do the live chat.
Right.
And when you're expecting live chat and you don't get live chat... There's a problem. But if you've got on your website called this number and it's tapping into the service, then you're going to get a human being, even if the only conversation is, let Jerry know I need to talk with him, have him give me a ring tomorrow.
Right.
I mean, that's a very different experience than going to live chat and then...
And having nothing happen.
Not very live. So in an earlier conversation, in an earlier segment, we touched just a very little bit on this idea of culture. So I'm going to get me a little bit of the secret sauce for this conversation is over. But surely you guys are doing something to cultivate a culture that helps you generate these kind of results. Give us some general counsel, if you will, about how to build the culture that produces results like this.
Okay.
He's giving up.
He's going to cough and splutter at the thought of giving away there. But no.
It can't be money, right? You can't motivate everybody by money all the time, right? Don't you have to have some culture, a bigger why to get them
absolutely.
Kind of motivated? And
if there is a secret, that is exactly it. It's the people.
Mm-hmm.
As a company, we would be absolutely nothing without the quality of our people. And it's not just in the call center, although that's so important.
Sure.
The operators have to really want to be there for our clients, but it permeates right throughout the whole company from, order taking. We've got a small sales team, for example, who never, ever, ever do any sales calls. They haven't got time. They're too busy taking referrals and taking calls, the people who found us on the internet and mm-hmm. so on. Our billing department, everybody is just totally awesome over there. And we just so value what they contribute to the company. And they just bring a lot of desire to actually do the right thing. And personally, I find it quite unusual. I've never worked for a company like it.
Right. I think it is unusual. Do you find that some of your clients had never had a call center or worked with a call center, and you have to kind of educate them on the best way to use your services?
Very much so. You know, people have got kind of strange ideas. You may be surprised, but I'm not actually from America. And
really? I thought I detected Smyrna. It's not Smyrna, the accent?
Gainesville, actually. Gainesville. North end of the lake. But, you know, I was brought up in over in Scotland, and, you know, I would see these movies of, you know, whatever, and I would see these call centers in operation, you know, doctor's call center or whatever, and it usually consisted of a little old lady sitting in the back of her kitchen with this one little board up, and, you know, she would connect the call through to the doctor and then listen in to see what was being said and so on. And so even I had some kind of strange and wonderful ideas of what a call center really meant. And that has been confirmed, you know, so often when people contact us and they say, I think I need a call center. Tell me why. And, you know, we have to explain to them just why they need a call center.
Right.
And, you know, if they're doing something like, you know, well, we have tree services, for example. I'm not quite sure why we have so many tree services on our books, but we do. And those guys are out in the field every single day, quite literally.
And so they can answer the phone even if they want to, because
they're at the top of a tree. Right. You know, if they answer the phone, they fall off, which is really not recommended.
Right.
We're always telling people, look, please don't answer the phone at the top of a tree. But, you know, they're out of the office, so, you know, we can do all sorts of things. We can send a text message to their cell phone so that when they are free, they can take and call somebody back. We can leave messages in all sorts of different ways, emails. You know, maybe they can designate someone that we can transfer a call to. It might be their wife, brother, sister, whatever.
And so it's nimble enough, right? It can change on a day-to-day basis, right?
Absolutely. And we can actually do that online for people as well, so that when they leave in the morning, they could say, okay, where am I today? They can get online to a dashboard, log in, and decide there and then what they want to do with their calls for that day. And it just happens automatically.
Wow.
So. And look what these folks are doing for the local economy. Lee, the jobs they're creating right here in Beaufort. That is outstanding. So obviously there's a real commitment to that as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just so important.
So you can take somebody that doesn't have call center experience and then train them up, and then in a short time they're being an effective call center operator?
One of the things we did in the early days was realizing there was a strong need to train people, that it was going to be very difficult to get people off the street who actually knew everything they needed to do about being the perfect operator. So we built a training center. It was the very first thing we did. And we can take about 30 or 40 people into that training center and train them in exactly what they need to do. We even built a video studio, for goodness sake. We spent like $500,000 or so on a video studio so we can create videos. And, you know, we can get people to watch the videos. Here's how to be the perfect operator without having to recreate it every single time.
Now, is there a philosophy for an operator? Are you trying to get the person on and off the call as quickly as possible, or do you want to give them time to talk? Like, is there any kind of strategy in that regard?
We would love to keep them talking forever since we're charging them for them per minute, but our customers tend not to like that. So, you know, given that there are always at least as more calls than we can ever answer, right? You know, if we can answer 10,000 calls a day, there'll always be 10,001 calls a day.
Right.
So we really do need to get people, you know, take the call and get it transferred, take
a
message,
whatever
they got to do.
Capture the right information.
Get on to the next one.
Move to the next one. But do it in a polite, kind of service oriented way. It can't feel like, you know, you're trying to get rid of me.
Absolutely.
Right? You got to kind of have that balance.
Very much so, yeah.
And that's probably part of your training.
I'm always quite amazed, actually, just how the girls in the, I say girls, there's guys in the call center, it's not just girls, right? I'm really going to get a hard time when I get back from the guys.
The HR guy, his ears perked up.
He's taking notes.
EEOC, here we come. But, no, the folks. In
right.
That's a good southern word, isn't it? The folks in the call center. You know, they always amaze me, just their ability to actually take these calls. Mm-hmm. Take them so well, take them politely, and, you know, get them off the phone and instantly pick up another call. We get people taking 300-400 calls a day.
Wow.
That's a ton.
That would drive me insane.
Now, outreach is an important component of your business as well, right?
Very much so.
Can you share a little bit about what's going on in that area?
Absolutely. We obviously do a lot of local outreach. We've got people, before really sending about it, what's fascinating there actually is how many of the employees have really got involved in this as well. It's something that we tended to do in the company. We told company employees about it, and everyone got so excited about it. So we've got people that go down on a, there's one on tomorrow, actually, for homeless guys in Atlanta. We've got probably about 40 or 50 people going down to help them, feed them, give them clothes. And
really? You so know, you do that as need. A company initiative?
It's a company initiative, but it's actually done by the people, right?
It was like grassroots, like the people started it. It wasn't like you guys say, hey, I need 40 guys to go down there.
Not at all.
They all came up with this, and then the company said, you know what, this is good, and we're going to encourage that and allow it to happen and foster it. Wow, that's fantastic.
We help sponsor a little bit. We've also got another sort of division. It's not really part of the company, but you'll notice straight away by the name of it, voicefornations.org, which is actually more of a global enterprise. We have various initiatives and fundraisers we do for, you know, things like shortage of water and just about any country you think of in the world, which is such a serious problem these days.
Right.
And that's going fabulously well. And, you know, we're always looking for more and more interesting ways of getting people involved in that. But again, the involvement we get from our people is just, it's just amazing.
Well, the passion for your work and the heart for the community, both local and on a global scale, just absolutely shines through, and I can see that that's obviously that's reflected in the balance of your organization. You must find this work incredibly rewarding.
Very, very much so. Years ago, my business partner and I, Jay Reeder, the president of the company, I just got to get his name in there. He'll never forgive me.
Hi, Jay. He really is on the radio. He's not getting in nine holes.
And his life. But we used to tell everybody years ago that we created the company as a place that we wanted to go and work. That, you know, our dream is to find the ideal company that if it was out there and we had to go and find a job, this is the company we want to go and work for. And given the feedback we get from our employees right now, I think we've achieved that.
Yeah, and the good work you're doing all over the place. I mean, that is, you guys must sleep well at night.
Indeed, yeah.
So let's get some coordinates, make sure our listeners know how to reach out and get in touch and talk with you about perhaps engaging you for some of these services, or perhaps there's a way they can get involved in helping you serve the community
And he needs a bunch of employees soon, right?
Absolutely.
We've got to get some employees on board.
Please get in touch with us. Anybody, whether they are interested in coming to work for us, I always want to hear from those people, or if you want to sign up for our services, the best website to go to is called qualityansweringservices.com. Okay. And if you go there, you'll get all the information you need on just about anything. You could even sign up for the service there and then. It's very interesting, actually, that if you actually really want to sign up for a live answering service, the typical setup time is about 5 days. Our setup time is about 30 seconds.
Really? You could just do it online and you're
absolutely
up and running?
You're up and running immediately.
Wow.
Considerably shorter, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, that's serving his clients. I mean, that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
That's what they need. They got a problem. They want to solve it. So in 30 seconds, they can solve it.
These guys are living into their mission, actually walking the talk. Well, thanks so much for coming down and hanging with us, man.
My pleasure. Can I just say one last thing, though?
Sure.
Sure.
Very, very quickly, just something I'm very proud to be able to say, that as of about 2:30 last Friday, I was sworn in as a U.S. citizen, and I just wanted to tell the world that.
Well, congratulations, and I am proud that you're part and sharing that on this show.
Yeah, congratulations. I am delighted and humbled and flattered that you wanted to be an American citizen, and I think that's fantastic, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But don't lose the British accent. There's a lot of marketing utility in that.
Scottish accent.
Scottish. Oh, yeah. That probably offended you when I said British.
Just be careful. Okay.
Hey, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our last guest today?
I would love to.
Terrific.
Thank you.
So next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us local committee president with ISEC at Georgia Tech, Christina Lara, plus one.
That's right.
Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Jump in there and just get after that microphone. Just think karaoke after a couple drinks. Just right in there on it. Just talk right into the very end of it. How are things going over there at ISEC?
Things are going pretty well. We just started our terms in January, so we're really excited to get work done.
Well, before we introduce your plus one, give us a quick overview, mission and purpose of ISEC.
Okay, so ISEC is the world's largest student-run organization, and we provide a platform for leadership development for young people. And we do this by facilitating exchange and a global learning environment. So we send interns abroad to other countries, and we bring interns here to Atlanta.
And you're at Georgia Tech?
Yes.
And who do you have with you?
This is Sophia Lazaro. She's my predecessor, and also she'll be working on the national team next year for ISEC United States.
Hello, Ms. Sophia. How are you?
I'm very good.
So you know that I am kind of predisposed to this idea of young people getting exposed to other cultures. I just went last night, picked up my kid from having been at an accelerated semester over at Oxford. She's been to China. She wants very much now to continue studying Arabic in Beirut. And she told me last night it was confirmed she's going to get a chance to do a little bit of interning here at the Atlanta World Trade Center.
Oh,
with
cool.
I can't pronounce Lilia's last name, but you guys probably know her, Lilia, down at the World Trade Center. So this is a subject very near and dear to my heart. At the same age, I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, and the extent of my travels went as far as Panama City. So I think it's fantastic to provide these opportunities. But so talk to us about how this thing works. So walk us through some of the mechanics of securing an internship, both from the company side, who might be offering it, and from the student side, if you would.
So from the student side, if you're a college-age student or you've graduated from high school or you've graduated within 2 years, so pretty wide range, we can send you abroad. So the way it works is you contact us through our Facebook page or through our website, and you're interviewed by someone who works with ISEC Georgia Tech who knows very well what opportunities we have on our system, in what countries, and what the requirements are. So they interview you, make sure you're a good candidate. Once they know that they can for sure provide you with the opportunity that you're looking for. Say you're looking to teach English in Oman. I use that example because that's what my brother's doing right now, working with the U.S. Embassy over there. Or say you're looking to do software development in Belgium, which is another opportunity we recently sent someone on. So you're interviewed, and then basically you're paired with someone who searches our database and emails you opportunities and walks you through the application process. Once you've been offered an internship, they also walk you through and help you with the visa process. And then the best thing about ISEC, and this is what I always tell students when they say, why should I do this instead of study abroad or instead of a different work abroad opportunity, is when you arrive in the airport in your destination country, so say you're going to Sahar, Oman, you get picked up by other ISEC members there. So just like how there's an ISEC here at Georgia Tech, there's an ISEC in Sahar University. So when me and my parents didn't worry about my brother going there when he didn't speak Arabic because they had sent him a video ahead of time saying, this is where you're going to find me in the airport. Here's the airport. This is me. And that was really, really great. So that's basically the process, is you'll work one-on-one with one of our members who will find you the right opportunity.
Now, is there an opportunity for everybody who participates?
It depends on what they're looking for. So the things that limit us are where they want to go and for how long they want to be
there. Right, like say I wanted to go and study lifeguarding in Australia.
So that would be difficult, mostly because we don't do studying. We are more of a work abroad program.
I want to work as a lifeguard in Australia.
Yeah,
Great Barrier Reef scuba diving. You know.
So just like we at Georgia Tech have to respond to the Atlanta market and work with the Atlanta market, is where is an international intern most relevant and most helpful? They have to do that all over the world. Mm-hmm. So if for some reason they do not have any lifeguards in Australia, then maybe we could hook you up. But
so what are the areas that have the most probability of me getting an opportunity? Is it software? And learn English, those kind of things?
Yeah, so teaching English and anything related to IT and technology, that's because we all know that those are the skills most in demand right now in the world, speaking English and being technologically proficient. So
now, teaching English, do I have to be like on an education track, or can I just speak English to be qualified to be teaching English?
No, if you're going from the U.S., you're pretty much attractive to any place that has a teaching English internship.
Really?
Yeah.
So are there lots of those opportunities?
There are a lot.
Like China, more than you might realize?
Yeah, there are a lot out there. especially like in rising countries like Southeast Asia, China, mm-hmm. South America, Latin America. There's a lot of opportunities out there.
And then do you get paid as an intern there, or do you just get to be there and do that in that place?
It depends on the internship. There's some that are more volunteer-based, so they pay for, like, accommodation, or they give you a daily stipend for food or things like that.
Right.
But there are, like, paid English internships. For example, in China, you could teach English at a university or, like, at a high school, and they might pay you.
Can you do more than one? Do you have people that, like, repeat?
Yeah. So my brother's on his second. So he started by going to Karvina, Czech Republic. Yeah, he picks really random places. And he taught English for 7 weeks. And it was a similar deal. He was paid a stipend, and they provided his housing. So he lived with other international interns who were also teaching their languages. But then now this position that he's in, now he gets a salary working for the embassy and working part-time also for a nonprofit.
Wow, what fantastic experience.
Is that usually the length is 7-8 weeks? Man. Is it a couple months typically?
It can be anywhere from 6 weeks to a year and a half.
A year and a half internship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. There's some. We actually have some here in Atlanta that are a year and a half with companies like UPS.
Yeah, our interns that come here tend to come for a year to a year and a half. They very rarely come for less than that.
And then how do these companies know about the opportunity here? Like it's the same system?
It's a similar system. So what happens is we are a J-1 visa sponsor. So we work with companies to bring over an intern for specifically to be on a J-1 visa. And that goes for from 3 months to 18 months. So the way it works is you can contact us, obviously. And an intern from 3 to 6 months costs $2,000. We're a nonprofit, and neither Christina nor I are paid. We do this because we believe in bringing people here to the United States and sending people abroad. That fee pays for health insurance for the intern while they're here. It pays for the visa, and it also pays for some money for us to be able to do some things with them. So, like, for example, we recently took some of our interns skiing. One of them had never seen snow, so that was fun. And things like that. So it's $2,000 for 3 to 6 months for an international intern, and then goes up by $1,000 for the next 3 months. So
the company pays your ISIC $2,000 or $3,000,
mm-hmm.
and then they also pay the intern?
Yes.
So that's in addition to the, whatever, $2,000 or $3,000?
Mm-hmm. So the minimum amount required by a J-1 visa is that the intern receive $1,600 a month. In Atlanta, we usually recommend that companies give interns either a company car or enough money to afford a car, simply because our city is not exactly public transportation friendly.
Right.
So we recommend around $2,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. And working with through these folks, you're legit too, right? You've got all your right paperwork. You people are covered properly.
I'd have
and all
to talk
stuff.
To Gary about the HR ramifications.
And so you guys are working both sides of the equation. You're facilitating movement in both directions. Wow, what fun! And how about the two of you? You guys are going abroad, or you've got plans to do that?
I've actually worked for ISIC Mainland of China for a summer, and I was doing sales there. I worked in Guangzhou and Beijing, China, working with foreign companies and seeing if they wanted foreign interns to bring into China. But mostly we do most of our work here at Georgia Tech.
Wow. And both of you have visions of long-term careers in international some flavor of
Definitely,
something, right?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm graduating from Georgia Tech this May. As Christina said earlier, I was her predecessor, so I served as president in 2012. And next year I'll be serving as vice president of account delivery. So I'll be working with all of our national and global partners to deliver on their contracts to bring the best international interns to them. But yeah, long term, I definitely plan to be involved in some amount of international development. I do think ISIC does provide that. Because when you have young people who come here to the United States and get a real flavor of what being a young American is from us and from spending time and working in the United States, I definitely think that contributes to developing the world and developing cultural understanding. And we get to do it both ways. So I'm very lucky to work with this organization.
Now, if there's companies here in town that wanted to learn more about this program, they would contact you, Christina, is that right?
Yes, they can visit our website at ISIECUS, that's AIESECUS.org, /Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. Or they can email my VP, who's in charge of sales, and that is VPICX-GeorgiaTech@ISIECUS.org.
Good stuff. Well, thank you both for being part of the show, and thanks to all the guests for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.